Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Well, that ought to wake you up for Second Amendment Radio in the great outdoors. Welcome in. I am Mark Cox, along with my partner, Bo Matthews, and Carl Middleman.
Hi.
Producing this extravaganza. Thanks for the music. I appreciate that.
Wake up, everyone.
That's great. I even see
Bo. Do you play guitar?
Banging his head over there. You know,
Mark,
what?
Do you play guitar?
You know, that's like asking somebody if they play golf.
He tries.
I have a guitar. I have played it better at various times than I do currently. But yeah, I do. You got guitars all over the wall there, Bo. Beautiful.
I got a camo guitar.
Oh, that's like a Ted Nugent looking guitar. That's awesome.
It actually, you know what? It's funny. It's actually a country star Blake Shelton version of the MK guitar.
Oh, nice.
But there's more dust on it than there should be, which is sad.
So you don't pick it up as often as you should. Is that what you're saying?
You know, I can do the chords individually. I just can't put them together. And I've got rhythm. I've been, you know, I've sang and, you know, as a kid and all kinds of that. So if you're at a campground and there's a bonfire and there's a guitar, I'm not the one playing it.
Yeah, me neither. I'd love to be able to do that. It's just been long time.
You're doing the bass, but not the bass
singing?
Guitar.
Yeah.
The bass voice.
Thank you.
Oom papa, oom papa.
So I'm going to speaking of which, I'm going to be around a campfire this weekend of my own, because I'm going to head out and camp a little bit. Take the jet ski, maybe get out on the lake a little bit. Should be fun.
So are you the guy with the truck pulling the RV, pulling the trailer of jet skis?
Oh, no. We'll take two vehicles.
Oh, come on.
That's not, first of all, I'm not even sure that's legal.
Well, sure it is.
No, I don't think it is. That's incredibly dangerous, I think, to have a 30-foot trailer and then a hitch on that and something behind that. That's different than driving a Class A RV and having something like a boat attached to the bumper.
I don't think
having three vehicles like that is safe in any way, shape, or form.
Well, it may not be safe, but I think you legally can do that.
Maybe.
You could probably put the jet ski in the boat, or you could probably put the jet ski in the RV.
What kind of, if you have a toy hauler, you could, but other than that, it's way too big and way too heavy.
And leaks gas.
Potentially. Yeah. Potentially.
I'm totally going to be finding this out for next week's show, because I want to find... I need to find some information. Maybe our executive producer might do it.
I will find somebody from somewhere. Not by the end of today's show.
Somebody
though.
Other than me to tell you that's a really bad idea. I mean, that's a bad idea.
And it can't be some Hoosier redneck going, hey, I did it.
Here's the thing. I mean, I've towed little vehicles and I've towed big vehicles, and you already have a problem with sway. If you've got a third vehicle back there, I just think that's a really dangerous combination. You're right. There may be people that do it, but I just can't envision why that would be legal.
I'm pretty sure it is. You know, condense the. We're trying to save gas, Mark. We're trying to save gas to your camping trip. Okay, if it's legal in the state of Missouri, can we get you to try it before the end of the year?
Not a chance. There's no way in heck I'm doing that. No way. No.
Okay, we're gonna have to call the Highway Patrol, because I've seen some rednecks do some things.
It is different from state to state.
Okay.
And I'm looking at Missouri right now.
Well, we're not going to find the answer. But anyway, so another camping trip. This one's going to be a little closer, probably not Florida, right?
Yeah, about 3 hours. Just go hang out by the lake and you know, dip our toes in. Hopefully it doesn't rain. There is some forecast, about a 50% chance of rain down there. So
makes it fun.
Yeah, we'll keep our fingers crossed. I am hoping it's going to be nice and cool in the evening. And I always look forward to having a campfire. I love to sit out around the campfire. The bugs aren't eating you up. So that's kind of what I like to do. And I won't be playing the guitar because I'm like you. I know a little bit of a lot of songs, but I don't know very many of them all the way through. And nobody needs to hear that.
I really, in my camping experience, I've always enjoyed coffee in the morning and reigniting last night's bonfire.
Yes.
And just taking some time with the birds and myself and getting my head. I love that moment. I mean, I love the evenings too with, you know, s'mores and everything, but, doing, you know, the mornings are, if I'm up first, then stand back.
If you're up first, having a shot of bourbon, kind of recreating what you did the night before, that's great.
Hair of the dog?
I'm just kidding.
I love it.
I didn't know. I didn't know where you were going there, you know?
You know what? I've got to tell you, I had a great experience at Razorback Armory because you are my hero, Big Fish. You told me of a firearm that you purchased, and I purchased the same one. And I don't even have to name it, but I can tell you this, that it took me 23 minutes. I called Razorback Armory and I said, hey, I'm looking for this. They said, come on in. We've got two of them. I go in 23 minutes. I'm out the door. I did my paperwork. I did the transaction and I'm out the door. And I was in a hurry. So it actually worked out really good. But when I got home is when I woke up and I thought, what in the world? I think I am right arm dominant. I write with my right arm. I'm, you know, right-handed, but my left eye is where I was putting the sight. My brain was like moving my hand. And I thought, have I been this way all my life? So I go to YouTube. So coming up on today's show, we're going to talk to a Navy SEAL who actually wrote the U.S. Navy SEAL Sniper Manual, Chris Synog. And so I'm excited to talk to him because it was eye-opening. Pun intended,
nice,
of course.
Nice.
But do you know if you are right arm dominant?
I am right arm and right eye dominant, so that's always worked out well for me.
So you could be a sniper.
I could.
I'm left.
Wow. But nobody who's seen me shoot would ever worry about that. So probably not.
I did junior ROTC, so we took marksmanship classes.
Yes.
And it was.
How are you, Carl?
I was good on the ground, prone. Not good kneeling, horrible standing.
It's hard.
It is very difficult.
It's hard with a rifle.
M1s are heavy.
Yeah, yes, true. That's true.
And I would say this too, that everybody that trains, and I'll be spending a lot of time with my new firearm at the range because I want to get so comfortable where it's second nature, that shooting with your less dominant arm, regardless, is a good thing because you don't know what's going to happen. So you want it to be accessible and it may be more comfortable on your left or your right or whatever. But I don't know. I just think it's really important that people pay attention to if you are right arm dominant, left eye dominant. We're going to find out how you can maybe get some assistance with that.
That's true.
Colleen Noir. Do you know the name?
You know, I told you earlier I'd heard the name, but I didn't know what the context was.
Well, a buddy of mine turned me on to him. He is a concealed carrier firearms aficionado. He reviews firearms individually and categories, but he's also up on all of the bills that are trying to be pushed through with this liberal Congress. And he's got a warning on his Instagram post that kind of caught my attention. And I actually listened and I followed what he said to do. And I reached out to Blaine Lutkemeyer, who's my U.S. representative. But here's a bit from Colleen Noir's Instagram post he did the other day.
In the coming days, the U.S. House of Representatives will be voting on two bills, H.R. 1808, which will ban semi-auto rifles and, yes, even some pistols. They'll also be voting on H.R. 2814, a bill designed to destroy the gun industry by allowing anyone to sue the maker of a gun simply because a criminal used that gun in a crime. When bills like this show up, people always ask me, what can we do? Well, here's what you need to do. You need to call, write, email, DM, or tweet your U.S. representative right now and tell them to vote no on H.R. 1808 and H.R. 2814. Remember, they work for you.
That is Colleen Noir, and I follow him on Instagram, and he's on YouTube and everything. Great guy, really knowledgeable, and great advice on you know, picking out firearms and stuff. But I did that. I actually went I went to his page to try and to find my representative, and you can just punch in who's my U.S. representative and punch in your zip code and you're off to the races. So I did send an email out this morning and got an instant, you know, canned response.
Yes.
And of course, I'm reading it and it's like, thank you for taking the time to contact me. I appreciate your views and welcome the opportunity to respond. I receive hundreds of letters, emails, and phone calls. And what that tells me is I'm not going to call you back. but I did, you know, because we always say, what can Americans do to help protect our gun laws?
Yeah.
It's tough.
Well, Blaine Luke,
this is scary.
Blaine Lutkemeyer is going to vote against this, as will, I imagine, every Republican in the House. But it's not going to matter. They'll be able to get these passed through the House, probably. They'll go nowhere in the Senate, which really, as we're now just a few days out, if you're hearing this on Sunday, 2 days out from the primary, it just drives home how important your vote is on Tuesday and again in November. You have to elect candidates who are going to stand up and say no, and you have to elect specifically a Senate candidate who is going to go to Washington and vote in your best interest and maybe retake the United States Senate from the crazy progressives who want to strip you of your Second Amendment rights and take away weapons from you. And imagine, Bo, if you got in a fender bender this afternoon or somebody stole your car and wrecked it, and then they were allowed to sue whoever makes your car, Ford, Chevy. I mean, why should you be able to sue the manufacturer of the weapon? It's a legal product. It makes no sense.
Great analogy. That's a great analogy. Or we could, you know, maybe fat people like myself could sue the utensil makers, like you always talk about. That'd be good. No, it's scary. You can do a quick search online about, you know, what happens to countries after their guns are banned. It never turns out good, people. It never turns out good.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You know, unarmed people are subject. Armed people are citizens. You need to be respected for your rights here. There are a group of people in this country who want to destroy our Constitution. That's what they want to do. There's no other way to put it. Imagine if they treated the First Amendment the way they treat the Second Amendment. People would scream bloody murder, particularly the protesters who showed up at an event I was at the other day and decided that they needed to block the driveway and keep people from leaving just to show their rear ends. They were exercising their First Amendment rights. If somebody had tried to silence them or stop them, they would have raised all kinds of cane over it.
And right? You know, something I've noticed too, that you know, you don't hear the term from the left as much of defund the police, but it's still ingrained in them.
Sure.
And I think that's frightening. There's a lot of people, all Americans, that think we need more police, more better trained police, whatever you want to call it. But here's the thing. That's a contrast. If you defund the police and you take away the guns or limit the guns, that's a frightening scenario. You talk about anarchy. It would be a dystopian. It would be a dystopian world that we would be living in, and it would be frightening because, you know what? If the guns aren't allowed, rocks, rakes, sticks. What, you know? I don't know.
I can think of four or five incidents that have happened in just the past 2 months that prove the insanity of what you just described. People wanting to take away your right to defend yourself. I mean, you need to have that right, because when you call 911, I got some bad news for you. If you're in the city of St. Louis specifically, it might take them 10 or 15 minutes to get to you if they get there that quickly, because they're undermanned, they're understaffed, right? Yeah. They're under a person, I guess I have to say these days. If you don't have the ability to defend yourself, protect yourself, that's an insane world, particularly given the fact that we don't prosecute criminals in the city of St. Louis anymore.
And I would add to that, in the rural area, there's a lot of distance between you and the next law enforcement officer, whoever that person is, the sheriff or your local officer, that, you know, and it doesn't matter where you are in this country. You need to be trained, and you need to not just train yourself. You need to get somebody to show you what to do with that firearm.
Right.
And you don't have to have a gazillion of them. You just need to make sure you're proficient with one or two that would be ideal for protecting your home, your, you know, the castle law, and protecting your family.
At which That's point, Bo down. Matthews, it's important to know which eye dominant you are. And our next guest is going to be able to help you with that. Chris Synog, a Navy SEAL, wrote the sniper manual, as you heard Bo say a few minutes ago. See, it's a fascinating conversation with him. He's written a new book called The New Rules of Marksmanship. He's going to help Bo out with his eyesight issue here. You need to hear what this man has to say. Also, if you're a parent, maybe you're a parent of young children that you haven't introduced them to fishing yet. We got a guy on who's written a complete article about the casual angler's guide to taking kids fishing for the first time. It's all coming up right here. You're listening to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Mark Cox is right there. My name is Bo Matthews, and we are always produced by Carl Middleman.
Pew, pew.
And yeah, there he is. There he is right there. My name is Bo Matthews, and this segment is brought to you by Razorback Armory. I've been in there a lot lately, Mark. I'm a new fan of sticky holsters. I don't know if you know what that is.
I do.
But it's a great holster. It doesn't have to clip or anything. Check that out. And I will tell you, and you'll hear this in my commercial for Razorback this week, I went in and I purchased a weapon that you have, and I think I text you about it. In and out in 23 minutes.
Wow.
Paperwork, sale, done, out the door. They knew I was coming for it, too. So check them out, RazorbackArmory.com. So after I purchased that new firearm, I was you know, aiming to the wall, and I'm like, why is my eye not focusing on the sights correctly? So I closed the other eye, and then I thought, okay, I need to figure this out. So I go on YouTube and I punch in right arm dominant, left eye dominant, and I come across this video of a guy who's this is legit, and I cannot even believe we got him on Second Amendment Radio. Carl Middleman, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Chris Synog is a master training specialist in the Navy and was hand-selected to write the U.S. Navy SEAL Sniper Manual. This is cred right here. This is street cred. He used this experience plus 4 years of study in neuroscience and elite performance to develop the new rules of marksmanship, a fundamental shift in learning how to shoot. And it was his video that brought us all together. Chris, welcome to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Man, I'll tell you what. We connected the dots and we got you. Tell me if this is a common problem. I've never been to the range with Mark, although we've been co-hosting the show for a long time. What is the first sign that somebody is right arm dominant, left eye dominant?
Generally, it's they're just not able to hold tight groups. They're, you know, no matter what technique you're trying to help them with, you know, I'm on the range and I'm trying to check them out and fix something, but nothing seems to work. I'll always stop them and I'll, you know, go, hey, all right, so you're right-handed. Let's check. Have you ever checked your eye dominance?
Right.
And most people have, you know, but what people don't know is that your there's a lot of things that can happen with your eyes in shooting. Your eye dominance can change over time. Your eye dominance can change depending on whether you're shooting a pistol or rifle, because it's dependent on what you're holding in your hands, because that also gives a reference to your brain as to which should be your dominant eye. And with distance also, as you go further back and further away from a target, your dominant eye can change.
So, Mark Cox here. Chris, great to meet you, and thanks for giving us some time today. You work with people on this. Just as an example, my son was and still is a very good trap shooter. But when he first started out, he struggled with it a little bit, and they ended up putting a piece of tape over his shooting goggles that he was wearing, his glasses, over his left eye, because they said that they described it as the fact that he had center eye dominance, and they wanted him to depend on his right eye. So that may not be something people have heard of either.
Yep, that's true. Also, it can actually be anywhere, you know, in between. Hopefully it's not on the outside. That'd be kind of weird, but yeah, it can be anywhere between your eyes also. So, and you can train it, and you know, there's tons of stuff that goes on with the eyes that people don't know. Like your non-dominant eye usually has better vision than your dominant eye too. So, and you can shoot with your non-dominant eye just as effectively as you can with your dominant eye. The problem is you're going to have to close your dominant eye, which is what they're probably doing, in your son's case.
Right. Yeah. Well, I worked for him. I mean, he went on to I think he broke 100 straight trap and almost 200 straight. I mean, it certainly helped him overcome whatever was slowing him down at first. You just have to have somebody who recognizes that. Is that common? I mean, are most people who are maybe NRA certified or training in marksmanship, are they familiar with all these principles?
No.
Okay.
No, they're not. Yeah. Yeah. I've read through the NRA instructor's manual, and it doesn't really even talk about eye dominance at all. So it's kind of depressing, but,
Chris, I'd like to
definitely out there.
Yeah, I'd like to interject that, you know, it's not tragic if this is the case. I mean, I think you even had some statistics, not that I'll ask you to recall them, but a lot of people are in this situation. So when you are at an arm's length, as a pistol would be, that's where, and with age, my vision has changed. I'm 55 now. My right eye is definitely weaker. What does somebody do if they're in that situation, whether it's their failing vision or, you know, from age or something else, or they are left eye dominant, right arm dominant?
Well, there's a couple of things there. So as your eyes get older, you know, and you start needing glasses, you can do what I did and measure the distance to your front sight that you want to be able to shoot at, and then go to a optometrist, and you can either get glasses made. If you get glasses made for rifle, you can go to my website, and I've got I worked with an optometrist on where the focal point needs to be on the lenses. That's a lot of details we probably don't want to get into. you can what I did was I had my dominant eye, my right eye, set for that distance to my front sight post, and then I had a contact made on my left eye for far distance. And surprisingly, most people, when they hear that, they're like, oh, you know, like I'd be seeing all weird and stuff. It, like, from day one, I'd never noticed it. The only thing I notice, and my girlfriend tells me this all the time, like she thinks I'm winking at people, but really it's, I'm having to change, you know, focus with one of my eyes at different distances. But yeah. And then the other thing is with your having a cross dominance with your shooting, it's best to find it when you're young or when you're first starting shooting. If you can, do that, the very best thing you can do, and I did this when I was teaching Cub Scouts, which is great because, you know, as a SEAL, I didn't have men, you know, at the point I could change them, so I had to use different techniques. But when you're young, you can teach somebody to shoot with their non-dominant hand just as effectively as you can with their dominant hand. Oh. It's very hard to get them to switch their dominant eye.
So. Interesting. So I hope people are paying attention to what you just said there, because if you get the earlier, maybe you get your kids involved in the shooting sports, the sooner you could recognize that, and that would be a huge benefit to them down the road.
Yeah. It's, and I hate to say it, but it's like statistically proven that cross-dominant shooters are not as good as, you know, same dominant shooters.
Okay.
But
that's horrible.
When you are older, you can train yourself to shoot with your non-dominant on your non-dominant side. And there's all kinds of stuff that you know, this is a day-long topic at least, because I have people in the military and law enforcement that when they're shooting, you know, with pistol and a long gun, and they transition, they will shoot their pistol with one hand and their long gun on their other side. And they can actually transition a lot faster than the rest of us. So
yeah,
that's an advantage there.
So Chris, tell people about your business and how they can find you online and read more about it.
Well, I always say the easiest way to find me, because my last name is, people always don't know how to spell it or say it, is just look up Navy SEAL Shooting. And if you do that, that's the name of one of my best-selling books. But you can go to Amazon. All my books are on there. How to Shoot Like a Navy SEAL, Navy SEAL Shooting. And then my latest one, The New Rules of Marksmanship, which is actually a workbook that teaches people how to shoot. It's not a book that teaches you this is how you hold the gun, this is how you stand, like most shooting books, like my other shooting books. It teaches you like the mechanics of how your gun works and how your body works and how to put them together to be able to shoot effectively. It teaches you how to train, how to learn. And then my website, chrissynog.com, I've got all my books on there if people want to get them signed. And I have courses on there, and I have a membership site. So it's all at chrissynog.com, S-A-J-N-O-G. And I think I put together a discount for your listeners.
Yes, you did.
Also.
And we thank you.
Do you remember what it was?
You know what? I've got it on my phone, actually. And you know what? It was fantastic. I'm sorry. Say it again.
Support 2A.
Yes.
Nice.
So that, yeah.
We'll put that on our website as well.
2A. And that is for $300 off my New Rules of Marksmanship course. It's a 30-day long course, all online. Teaches you how to shoot in 5 minutes a day at home.
Wow, that's
fantastic. You know, when I realized this, Mark, that I was right arm dominant and left eye dominant, I thought, how much ammo have I freaking wasted over my lifetime? Ugh. Well, Chris Synog, what a pleasure it is to meet you and have you on our show. Maybe we can have you on again concerning other things, other books, whatever.
Definitely.
But we thank you. And I would suggest next time your girlfriend accuses you of winking at somebody, saying, I'd say, I'm a Navy SEAL. I don't have to wink at nobody.
They wink at me. Yeah?
Exactly.
Yeah, right. All right. Chris, good luck to you. Thanks for joining us on Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors, sir.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Great to get him on here. Wow.
I had no idea.
So I know. Eye-opening.
If you go, I winking.
I got that pun.
If
was
you
great.
Go to where you get the Odyssey app and you download the podcast, in the description, we will have a link to Chris's website, and we will have the code so you can save
the promo
money.
Code.
Nice.
Yeah, $300 bucks off. That's awesome.
You bet. Hey, coming up, of course, we do talk about shooting sports. We talk about the Second Amendment. We talk about the great outdoors, which includes fishing. And, you know, we just talked to Chris about getting kids involved in shooting early. How about fishing? That's something you need to do, too. And there's a new guide out to taking kids fishing for the first time. Fascinating. Love it. I have great memories with all my kids. We'll talk to the author coming up on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
It is Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. That's Mark Cox. I'm Bo Matthews and Carl Middleman, our executive producer. And
Hi.
We move in to the Great Outdoors area of the program. And again, Chris Synog, that was fantastic information from a true Navy SEAL. I always heard that if somebody tells you they're a Navy SEAL, they're really not. Have you ever heard that before?
Is that a dig at Eric Greitens? What are you talking about?
I'm just kidding.
I've never interviewed Eric when he didn't mention the fact that he was a Navy SEAL.
Yeah, he doesn't. Other people mention it. He doesn't mention it.
Who?
Eric.
He always mentions it.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does he? Okay. Well,
he does. I mean, it's okay,
I don't
though. It's something to be proud of. How few people in the world accomplish that? Honestly.
Dude, I would have a hat, you know, and I've seen guys with hats, actually. But anyway, moving right along. We've got an opportunity. If you've never, ever taken your kid fishing, the first rule is when you take a kid fishing, you take a kid fishing. You're not doing any fishing. But there's a great article in Popular Science or PopSci.com by John Levasseur. He is a writer there, and his Casual Angler's Guide to Taking Kids Fishing for the First Time is a great read for anybody. So if you've got little ones and you want to take them fishing, this is just great information. And ironically, John is spending time with his kids right now at a playground as he joins us on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Welcome, John. How are you, buddy?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing good. What got you started on writing this article, and have you implemented all your advice?
We certainly try to do the things in that article as much as we can when we take the kids out. My kids are 7, and they went out on the boat for the first time when they were about 6 weeks, and they've been fishing since they could realistically hold a rod and reel a little bit. You know, we had to cast for them and all that at first, but we've been doing it for a while now.
Well, tell us a little bit about your point here. So, I mean, I think a lot of parents have done this. What are the tips you give to people who haven't been through it yet, or maybe the kid's still a little bit too young in the next year or two, or maybe this is the summer when they're going to take them fishing for the first time?
I think the most important thing is to make sure that that it's engaging and constantly stimulating. When we as adults go fishing, you know, you're out there for a few hours, and on a good day you're going to catch, you know, 5, 8, 10, depending on how good a fishing you are, fish. But you're not going to be catching fish every minute. So the thing we always try to do is we start in my region up in New England. We start with trying to find the schools of sunfish. So we go out not real early in the day. We go out when the sun's high and find a rock pile and look around for the sunfish. And we don't try to fish with lures or anything with them. We're using worms and all the tasty stuff that the sunfish like. And, you know, on a good day, we'll, you know, my father-in-law and I can't actually fish ourselves if we're doing it right, because we're so busy taking sunfish off the hook. So.
And that's a good day. That's a good day. Now, would you say that those that have never fished, when they were growing up, could still get enough information out of your article to take their kids fishing, even if you got to go to the Walmart and pick up a Snoopy pole?
Yeah, I think so. I think one thing that, especially if you've never been fishing before, you probably want to get, one of the tips in the article is to get some local information. So even if it's, you know, a friend of yours is a fisherman in the region, just chat with them about kind of where to go. Cause what you don't want to do is just randomly show up at a, at a lake and start casting from shore and hope for the best. You want to have at least some sort of idea of kind of where you're going to likely have the most success. Obviously, the fish move around, so there's never a guarantee that they'll be there. But it's probably not a good idea to go into it blind, especially if you're going with your kids.
Yeah, true. You want it to be a successful experience, not stressful. And particularly you, John, I'll point out, you have twin boys. So you had double the responsibility, right?
That's right, yeah.
John Levasseur is a contributor, writer for Popular Science with this article. You know, it actually made me laugh when you were talking in the article about staying local, find a pond or, you know, find someplace close to home, because I picture people, you know, going out to buy a Snoopy pole and then buying an RV and a boat, and then they all take off for, you know, the far reaches of the country to find the best fish. You can actually fish in a lot of places around any local area. And if it's private property, you definitely want to ask permission. That's kind of my rule.
Yep. For sure.
And at what point do you think parents can actually join the kids fishing? Because like I said at the front of the interview here, if you're taking a kid fishing, that's your job. You're taking a kid fishing.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously it'll be different for every kid. My kids are just about to turn 7 now. And we've reached the point where they're this season, they've started to be more independent. You know, we still got to make sure that we watch them put the worms on the hook and, you know, have to help them take some of the trickier fish to get off. And, you know, before they start lipping pike, make sure it's a fish that you can actually lip. But you know, they're now starting to take the fish off the hooks themselves and throw them back and do the worms themselves. And they've been able to cast since they were 5. So it's gradually, you know, we always bring our stuff to fish as adults. And we're getting to do that more and more. This year they've finally started being more interested in, lure fishing themselves. So we still do the sunfish fishing and, you know, go out and catch 40 fish, but they also now they've caught bass and they know that catching a, you know, a 2-pound smallmouth bass is very different than catching a, you know, 2-ounce, sunfish. Yeah. And they kind of, now they have that idea in their head that, oh, I can do that. So once they start lure fishing and being able to be a little bit more independent, and you know, you can trust them not to hook themselves with regularity, then you can start fishing a little bit more. So the tricky part is you're not necessarily also fishing in a location that's conducive to your kind of fishing. If you're fishing for sunfish, there's probably not a lot of bass around to catch, at least in my area. We rarely catch bass when we're on the sunfish.
Yeah.
The other tip I would say, as they start getting, and this I don't think is in the article, we wear sunglasses regardless of the weather, regardless of the time of day, whatever. Those kids are unpredictable when they are casting, even when they know how to do it. And we don't want them hooking each other in the eyes or me in the eyes. So, we've got glasses on. If it's 8:30 at night and dark, we're still wearing our sunglasses.
So funny you brought that up, because I was just thinking about this. My father-in-law, God rest his soul, his favorite story is being in the boat with his son. And, you know, he's casting with a lure, and that treble hook landed in my father-in-law's eyebrow. Ew. I mean, missed his eye by that much. And, of course, you can imagine the curse words that were being spread across the lake
at that point
when this happened.
I can't. Go ahead and please tell us.
but he still had the scar from it. He'd be glad to show it to you when his son hooked him with that treble hook that time. So it's a great idea. I mean, I'm not sure that the sunglasses would protect you from that, but they would certainly protect your eyeball, and that is great.
Yeah, it's more important.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, well, right. I'll take a hook in the cheek over the eye for sure.
Wow.
That doesn't sound good either.
I know. No kidding.
I did not take one. I'm saying I would over the eyeball. I would sacrifice that.
Oh, yeah.
I just felt bad for every fish ever caught on this planet ever. Oh boy. this is pretty cool. And you know, and now, I mean, with technology, you can go, if you've never fished with your kids and you want to do it, you see people doing it, YouTube, university. I mean, I go there for to learn how to do so many things. You can go there, and of course there's apps too for any local area. But like you mentioned in your article on PopSide, by the way, John Levasseur is our guest. You know, you can keep the tackle simple. Again, a bobber, barbless hooks is good, worms, a fishing pole, Snoopy leeches. Pole if you want to do that. And that's it. And what else, Mark? What else?
What's that?
What else do you take? Oh, beer. You got to take beer.
Oh, yeah, you got to take beer. I thought you were talking to John. I'm sorry. Yeah.
And one Coca-Cola for the kids.
Well, he's got twins, so he needs two of them because they don't share.
That's right. That's right. You do. Snacks are important. Snacks are really, really important. Bring a granola bar. Bring whatever, something, because they will get bored and they will get grumpy, and you can stay out longer if they have something to eat.
I think that's great, John Levasseur. Listen, it's a pleasure having you on today. You said popside.com, right?
Yep.
Is the best website. You can go check out his article there on taking the kids fishing for the first time. So it's a casual angler's guide to kind of run you through it if it's not something that you've done before or that you do regularly. I think that's great. John, we appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Hey, good luck with them boys.
Yeah, no kidding.
Thanks.
Getting the twins out, that's a handful. There's no doubt about it.
Double trouble.
Yeah, you never been hooked, Bo?
Of course. I grew up in Minnesota. I got hooked all the time.
Of course.
Bottle rocket target. I was hooked many times. I had mean cousins. That's what that that was.
You haven't lived until you've had to work one of those out of your finger. Ouch. No doubt about it. All right.
It's the worst. Okay, get out and get fishing.
Good stuff. No, a little shooting, a little fishing. We've covered everything for today on Second Amendment Radio.
Absolutely. Mark, have a great rest of your weekend, buddy.
I will. Gonna head out and camp a little bit this weekend. Take the jet
and
ski
please,
out. It's going to be fun.
Please come back with great stories. The weather's supposed to be perfect for you, so enjoy that. The balloon glow this weekend on Saturday night, very cool. And we thank you very much for listening. Please share this show and the podcast, Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. See you, boys. So just look at them and sigh,
and know they love you. Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.